Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Welcome into a very, very special episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And it's a podcast that's hosted by me, Kyle Schoenewill, and my longtime friend, Robbie Earle. Everybody, stay calm! Stay calm! It's happening, Robbie. It's happening. We're here.
Man, I was half expecting, like, an hour before the premiere, some further last-minute delay just because we've been punished for so long.
Probably because we had posted about it, right? So then they heard that we posted right. And they had to quick cancel it because if we try to predict it, you know, it doesn't work. Okay, there's so much to get into. Welcome to the show. Wherever you are listening and however you are listening, we are so grateful for you being here. We're pumped to do this. We have been hyping up new content since we started this podcast. I mean, believe it or not,
right.
We started this podcast in September of 2019, which was already post any of the movies. So everything has always been a rewatch. And finally this week, I had my first watch, not rewatch. And if you know me, you know how much I value that first experience. And so I try so hard to let that first watch be so fun and moving for me because I'll never get that back. And so in a way, I hope that this podcast going forward enhances those watches for you guys. And then when you rewatch them with your family and friends, that's what I hope Robbie and I can bring to this podcast. So Robbie, I need to get into a few like nitty gritty housekeeping things because this is the first episode of WandaVision, okay? There's a lot of things I got to get into real quick. Then there's so much to talk about with the actual episode. To everybody out there, Robbie and I have had a lot of discussions about how we want to handle spoilers, not spoilers, social media spoilers, all that stuff. So here's kind of our plan. We think that this podcast is best when it's just an open discussion of our favorite content, right? Like I said, I want to bring joy to these shows and movies for you. And part of that for me is getting that first experience, right? Like valuing that. I think there's other people out there that probably feel the same way. So we really, really don't want things spoiled on our pages or anywhere, but especially our pages.
Right, right.
Which is obvious. Nobody does. But here's kind of our plan. The episodes come out Friday morning at what, 2 a.m.? It seems like that's going to be the trend. Whenever you watch it, that's awesome. Feel free to interact on all of our social media pages at the FFW podcast. Okay, interact there. We love that. But do not put anything spoiler related at all on there. If you want to, though, message us, like direct message us on Twitter, direct message us on Instagram, Facebook, so where other people can't see it. In those messages, let us know your thoughts. Let us know your questions. Let us know an Easter egg that you know we're not going to pick up on. Tell us those things there. Robbie and I will avoid those messages until we actually watch the show on Friday. And then on Saturday, Robbie and I sit down to record these episodes. So if you don't have your messages in by Saturday, we can't respond to them. But our dream is that it can kind of be like a mini mailbag type thing where your comments, your questions, your concerns are thrown into us. And then on Monday, when you have the episode come out, we can have a full-blown discussion on those things you submitted, totally full of spoilers. At that point, that's what I think the best plan is. Message us privately, ask us questions, give us feedback. We'll get to that in the episode. And then on Monday, we can full-blown discuss that.
Yep. I mean, because we've already gotten a few great messages that weren't even asked for that I think is going to make today's episode even more fun than it was already going to be. So yeah, we love when you guys reach out with questions or comments. But yeah, we might, don't be alarmed if we wait to respond, because one, we might just wait and respond in the episode, and two, we obviously won't respond until we've actually seen the episode.
Well, and obviously the disclaimer is we might not get to every question or comment, and we might not be able to answer like Robbie just said, but like we truly do feel like that discussion and the community we want to build with you guys is what's a little bit different about our podcast. So we don't just encourage that. Like we love that for real. So let's keep that going, but let's just keep it off our wall on Friday, Saturday.
Love it.
Okay, so follow us there on social media at the FFW Podcast. We also have a website, theffwpodcast.com. You can send us messages on there. And then also, don't forget, please subscribe and follow to our podcast wherever podcasts are found. Secondly, I love that Marvel has created such a consistent quality thing now, Robbie, for 15 years or whatever it's been. It's getting ridiculous at this point.
Man.
But even with that, there's always going to be some people that have differing opinions than us, and we love those too. So don't think that if you're not a huge fanboy of what you're watching, you can't be a part of this. You know, submit your concerns or let me know what you don't like. That's okay.
Like we've all watched The Incredible Hulk.
Right. It's just such a weird thing because we started this podcast because we love Marvel so much, but we also acknowledge that they're not flawless, right? Sure. So there's a good balance there of bringing that passion, but there is some things we can, you know, raise questions about. Maybe not with this show, though. I'm just saying. Okay, anyways, let's stop. Let's get into it. That's about all of my housekeeping. Okay, I think we start big picture, general ideas, then we work through the episodes linearly. Do you love that?
Perfect.
I think the key word for my biggest takeaway, right, was different. That's the key word, unique, different. And I think I realized watching this show last night, as I've said in this podcast before, but it fully hit me, I think that is such a huge key word for Kyle's liking. I am always looking for different. I think there's maybe that's the slight artist in me, the musician in me, like, I love that true art is a creation, not a recreation. And so I think pushing these boundaries is like the number one goal for me in these shows, in these movies. And I think it's something Marvel does so well. I have so many examples of times we've compared to other things, right? When we talked about like the ending of Wonder Woman, the first one, how they had a chance to make it really unique, they didn't. I've complained before about how Star Wars feels sometimes like a reboot and they're not pushing the ball down the road. They're not trying new things, maybe out of a fear of the fan backlash from that being too big of a swing.
Right.
And yet Marvel, for some reason, maybe it's the consistency up top with Kevin. Maybe it's the safety he has with Disney. I don't know what it is. They don't shy away from these massive swings and trying to do something different. And so I'm watching this going, this is so refreshing to me because I don't know what the heck I'm seeing. Like, this is so far out there. And the further it got out there, the more I liked it. and so I just realized, like, I got a few texts last night when I was watching it. To some people, you know this, like, different is not what they're looking for. You know the backlash with The Last Jedi, right? When they tried to do something different. And I got a little bit of that feedback before, and I want to say that I'm not belittling your opinion. This is just my opinion that I value differently. I want you to have a different opinion. But I struggle a little bit with people that think the show is too far out there. I think it's the same people, Robbie, that get a little bit bothered by Ragnarok being too zany or not being the Thor they know, or like Guardians being about a raccoon. Those were massive swings in Marvel's history, and I think this is on par with that. Like, this is the next swing that is so unique. And I just come back to what we've talked about before. Like, if you don't want different, that's okay. I'm not belittling you. But I would ask, what do you want? Because if you just want to see more of Wanda and Vision flying around shooting lasers out of Vision's head, I think that's cool too, but you already have that. Like, you can go watch that. these characters need to evolve and go somewhere. And so that is often why, that's my long explanation for why I value different. And I think there is a small faction of people that don't as much as me.
Right. No, I mean, I think it's a really interesting debate. And it's something that I think creatively you always have to wrestle with in any enterprise. You know, it's like, I feel like that's what makes a sophomore album so difficult after a hit debut album, because half the people want you to do something yes. really bold and be bold in the same way your first album was bold, but half the people want you to just make that first album again.
Right.
And so it's like so rare.
Artists get crushed all the time when they try a new sound on the second album.
Right. But then if they don't, then they get called lazy and, you know, basically
every song
unimaginative.
Sounds the same.
Right. Yeah. So it's like, I think it's always a difficult spot, and that's why I'm always so impressed when it's done well. And that's one of the things that I think makes, you know, we've talked over and over again about some of those big swings in Endgame, so I won't go through them in detail, but I think that's what made that movie controversial within a certain like fan community of like hardcore Marvel fans, of which like I would count myself. But you're right, it's people that I think there are people that would have liked for the MCU to be essentially frozen at Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
Like in terms
or like
of
Winter
the representation
Soldier over
of the
and
characters.
Over and over again.
Right. I mean, it's like you want the characters as their sort of classic, iconic versions, and you just want to sort of keep, which in some ways is what the comics have been, although I feel like the comics have also had a lot of status quo upsets that I think the MCU has started taking cues from lately.
Well, maybe that is a big difference between comics versus the movies, right? Like, I don't read the comics, so I want my movies to evolve. But yeah, in general, the comics kind of set that precedent by the nature of them being around for decades.
Sure.
Right?
For sure. Although, you know, I think it's fun because comics have the ability, and this is actually what I like about the MCU on the flip side. Comics can make these big swings, one, because they know their comic books and they don't have to appeal to wide audiences the way that studio movies do. But two, because they always know they're going to reset, right? Like there's this famous Spider-Man story from the past decade where Dr. Octopus basically takes over Spider-Man's body for like a year and a half of Spider-Man comics. So Peter Parker just isn't there in Spider-Man comics, essentially. And you can do that there, right? Because everyone knows eventually, somehow, Spider-Man's going to come back as Peter Parker. And the question is really just how is he going to figure out how to do it? Because there's always a reset coming. I think what I really like about the MCU, as opposed to that, is there should at least, and this is kind of what we've talked about in looking towards this show and Loki, characters that we know to be dead, like we want those things to have consequences because the movie universe has told us that these things do have like a long-term impact and they can't just be easily reset all the time. And so I think that adds a lot of weight to it. But I also think that it means that these swings are bigger, right? Because you can't just take a risk and then undo it later, because then you really are going to wind up taking a lot of the power out of the broader meta narrative, and you're just going to sort of lose credibility with viewers. So all that to say, I think your initial comment about this being so different and so risky is a lot of what I love about it, because again, yeah, like it would be so easy for them to just go back to the same formula. And I love that they're not doing that. But for me, the key word is not just different. For me, the key word is execution.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I was going to add in when you were done. I was going to say that, like, I would encourage our viewers to, once you realize that it is different, right? Now just try to look at the thing and ask yourself, okay, they're trying to be this. How well are they actually doing it? Like, are they executing what they're trying? And that's what I said with like Wonder Woman 1984. It's like they're right. trying to do 80s, but they're not really executing it. So, okay, it's different, great, but it's not doing it well. The kicker right. with this show is like I'm watching going, this is so different. It's not the Wanda and Vision you were used to seeing, but how well are they doing it? And
right.
no matter how you look at it, they're executing it to perfection. I think it was even more in-depth than I thought it was going to be. You know, Robbie, we sat here and talked about on paper from the trailers what the show was going to look like, right? Like we said, it's kind of a sitcom and it might advance the different sitcoms as you go to each episode. And, you know, they use practical effects. And I said all those things, but I don't think I fully realized how intense it was going to be down that path until I actually watched it. I mean, they nail it. They nail every detail about a 1950s sitcom.
Right. I mean, it's absurd. Like, I'm with you. I think if I had any hesitancy about the show, which there wasn't a ton there, and people can tell by the way we've talked about it, but it was that it would be kind of gimmicky. Like, I thought they would take from the aesthetic, right, but then just sort of be, like, so kitschy as to not really do anything that interesting. And I don't think that as we were watching it last night, I was struck by how much it's not just the writing, like the dialogue, because it's really easy. Like, you know, I feel like shows have done this before, like parodied older sitcoms for little like flashbacks or dream sequences. And it's easy to kind of have a brief scene where they talk like the couples do in a classic sitcom style. And it's like you have the sort of patriarchal and like housewife relationship going and whatever. But this is like,
Robbie, it's everything. It's the dialogue, it's the score, the music, it's the intro scene, it's the credits.
It's the plots. Like it's like the crazy thing is right. Like, so this first episode is essentially a classic miscommunication.
Yes.
Which is like, that is the sitcom story, right? Like, it's like, and you see it happening because, like, we should, I guess, just get into the plot here to kind of explain this.
Hold on. I want to say that I watched this twice, and I was watching it last night in bed on my phone, and I pulled off my headphones a couple times and said that exact thing to my wife. I said, in the first episode, even the way they're having that phone conversation and both talking about the wrong thing, but they think they're communicating. That is such a classic, like what they would have done in the Dick Van Dyke Show. Like that is like what the whole episode is built on. And it's kind of just like a little quick view into this side story of this one miscommunication and all the funny things that even, you know, come from that. I mean, dude, even shows like Seinfeld in the 90s built off that vibe, right? Like one funny story.
And Friends.
Yeah, and it kind of goes from there. But dude, it's not just that, but that's what I was blown away by. It's the plot, it's the writing, it was the visuals, it was the music, it was the practical effects. I mean, even the fact that like they recapped each episode on the couch is such a like old school sitcom thing to do. So like they're like wrapping it up for the stage live audience. Like, by the way, the live audience. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like they go all out. So when we talk about different, it's not just different, it's different backed with execution. That's what makes it excellent. Not just the fact that it's different.
Cause you're right. I think even if someone decides this is just not their cup of tea, which is totally,
that's what I
want to
get to
fair.
Next. Yes, you're doing it for me. I'm so excited. It's happening.
you can't, like you said earlier, you can't look at this and say it's not done well. You just can't. Like, what you can argue that they shouldn't have tried to do it at all, like if that's just not what you want to watch.
Yep.
But once you, like you said, recognize this is what they're going for, like, holy cow, I just can't imagine how they could have done it any better. And I know we're fanboys on here, but I was a little nervous in some ways.
We're not always. I told you a million times I'm nervous about Spider-Man 3. Like, that is not a fanboy thing to say. No, I'm not always. But I was blown away by the execution. I want to add to what you just said. To the extent that I understand, WandaVision has 97% critic on Rotten Tomatoes and 86% fan score so far. And so a couple things. Almost everybody loves it. It's actually the highest rated MCU thing thus far, which is wild. I'm not going to compare it to all those things yet. But I'm just saying it's pretty well received. But a couple friends texted me that, A, there has been some Twitter backlash, and then which there always is, I mean, crime and rumor. But then also a friend said to me that the humor didn't quite hit home. And let me first say to that friend, like, I get that. I like a differing opinion. I'm not mocking that opinion. But I was watching it a second time, realizing, like, the humor in particular, right? When you say it's not everyone's cup of tea, you're right. Maybe you would argue, like, just don't even try this vibe. Okay, that's an argument you could make. But once they are trying this vibe, I was dialoguing about this with Annika, And it's hard to put words to this, but like the show itself is trying to embrace so much cheesiness that no, the humor to me isn't like funny. Like it's not my humor, but the fact that they're doing it and it's that cheesy is the funny thing. Does that make sense? Right. Like it's hard to explain. Yeah. It's not like I'm cracking up at every joke, but I'm laughing at the fact that they're trying to be that effective of like dating themselves in the 1950s. But then I want to add one other caveat. There was some things that were just legitimately funny to me.
That's what I was
like,
going to say.
That still translated and weren't dated. But in a way, the humor is trying to be dated. And I had a hard time trying to like figure out how to say that. But that's kind of my takeaway with like, if it's not your cup of tea, maybe watch it through the lens of like, it's not supposed to be my humor. Appreciate the weirdness of the humor.
Right. No, I mean, the way you said it is probably the best way I can say it too. But yeah, it's interesting because you're watching it somewhat ironically, right? Because the show knows, and we as viewers know, that this is not the kind of humor that resonates with current viewers.
Right. The show knows it. That's key.
Right. But at the same time, I found it not just enjoyable, but yeah, like I actually laughed and I was watching it with several people and we all laughed at several moments, which is again, something that like, I think I would have been like, had this been pitched to me, right? Like I think my hesitancy from the studio side might've been like, well, like even if we replicate this idea really well, people just don't like those sitcoms anymore. So like, what if we're just making a show that's like so perfectly emulating I Love Lucy, but guess what? Like people in 2021 don't watch I Love Lucy. So,
right.
You know, like,
that's kind of my point. Right.
So you're coming up against a whole different issue, but that's why I think it's really crazy that like within that, they're still finding ways to be actually funny. And I actually saw a tweet that where someone said, you know, I think WandaVision is the funniest that I've seen the MCU be in at least a particular way, which we don't have to debate the merits of, but I think
it's
interesting.
Which is not true, but yes, keep going.
Well, I think it is true in a particular sense, right? Like I think that like they're trying a unique brand of humor in the same way that like Ragnarok tried its sort of own thing and Guardians did its own thing and yada yada. But I think that like,
Okay. I love WandaVision, but it's not even trying to be as funny as Ragnarok was. Like, I know it's a unique brand, but I don't think this was made to be a comedy.
No. I think that's what's so interesting, though, is it definitely is in ways, right? I mean, like, there are whole scenes that are clearly meant to be played for laughs. and there's no, right? Like, there's not. That's
it
what's so
matter.
Interesting.
It doesn't
about
matter.
It.
I guess.
But I just mean like that's why I think that there will be some quote unquote backlash from certain people that have been wanting something from the MCU because if you step back and look at it, you're like it's not a comedy necessarily, but you know there's not a ton of drama. I mean, there are like hints of things that we'll talk about here. There is zero action. Like, there's not, like, a constant, and there's some suspense in the background, again,
suspense,
but it's not,
mystery,
like, in
and
your
intrigue.
Face.
Yeah.
Right, but, it's just, like, an interest, it's such a unique style of show, and my last thing kind of on the big picture here is I follow and engage with online a lot of film critics that, you know, naturally tend to be skeptical of the MCU. These are the people that would side with Scorsese in kind of those famous debates that we've discussed in the past. And these are the people that I have seen just loving this show. Like people that I think were so ready to write it off that are, and that makes me happy because I just, we've talked about this. Like what I love is whenever people that are so prepared to be cynical about it and that are so ready to write it off because it's another dumb Marvel project and they just keep funneling them out. Like, I love that people like that keep getting roped in, whether it was Guardians that brought them in or Ragnarok that brought them in or WandaVision, right? Like, that I would way rather Marvel do something that's a big swing that pulls in those folks than do something that just pleases the core superhero fans that, you know, have already, I don't know. Maybe I'm not trying to be, I'm not trying to be controversial here.
I love it so much. I want those people, by the way, to find some of that in other Marvel movies because it exists. And I feel like those people write off Marvel movies because they think they're all the same and it's not true. Secondly, my in-laws are in town now because I had a baby, by the way, which is wild. I have a baby. First time.
Yeah, that's crazy. We haven't talked about that.
No,
hey,
I know.
Hey, congrats on being a dad.
Hey, thank you. It's been, she's beautiful. Her name's Violet. I love her so much. My wife's doing great. My in-laws are in town helping and they specifically are not Marvel fans. Like my father-in-law has kind of like written off Marvel like we were just talking about. He's one of those people. But I told him, hey, because you're in town, I have to watch this show on Friday. So you can watch it with me or you can sit in your room, whatever. And so we watched it and I think he really got into it. He has Disney Plus and now he wants to like keep up with it. And struck me, I actually told you on the phone, I was like, yeah, like this show is going to have some appeal to people like that. Who, like, if you didn't like the Marvel thing, well, this is very different. You could still like this. Okay, the last thing I want to address kind of before I go through the episodes linearly is that the only other pushback I got from friends is that one friend said, like, not much happened plot-wise. So it's the same friend who said the humor didn't really hit him the right way and that just not a lot happened plot-wise. And I was struck by that because I thought to myself, A, he's kind of right. Like, it wasn't a full-blown movie plot complex, and it's not Winter Soldier with twists all over the place.
For sure.
B, I thought, you know, we only saw two episodes of what's intended to be a 9-episode thing, so it's kind of like watching the first 2/9 of it and then pausing and making a judgment, which is what we're doing. But that's, you know, plot-wise, give it some time. C, then I thought, that's kind of like my complaint with The Mandalorian at times, which I love, but the complaint was that it feels very like video gamey, right? That like he goes and does a side story here, then he goes and does a side story here, and it's all different characters and a whole different thing, and there's not much tied together until the second season. And like, I could see that a little bit in this show, but then I guess my rebuttal to all that would be, one, this is a sitcom, and they're trying to kind of do that, right? That's the whole nature of a sitcom is that there's like a, like we said, a little episodic thing that's just that event for that episode, like the talent show. That's just that episode is the talent show or just the dinner. The dinner party is like the other. So it's like, yeah, a little bit they are trying to not do massive plots. The massive plot is just they're trying to fit in Westview and what the F is going on with everything else. That's the massive plot. But yeah, I can see that a little bit. But so I guess I can see that a little bit. But those are my rebuttals is that they're trying to kind of do that. There is a bigger plot besides that. And we've only seen 2/9 of the movie. So I don't know. I just wanted to address some of the pushback I got via text message before I dove into what I loved. Because I did love it, and I don't think I agree with that, but I'm sure there's some people out there that felt those two concerns. The humor didn't hit them, and that the plot wasn't moving the ball down the road a lot.
Right. Yeah. I would say I get that because I was maybe expecting it to leave us on more of a clear cliffhanger than it did. I think you could argue it still did. But yeah, I mean, I think I see where those people are coming from.
Okay, so this is going to kind of lead us into the actual episode. But Robbie, we talked about ahead of time how Elizabeth Olsen had said to us that there was going to be different eras kind of honored, like pay homage to different eras in different episodes. And we said, well, I don't know if that's going to be one per episode. I don't know if that's going to be they're going to stick in the 50s forever and then just do a couple later. I didn't get that. But holy crap, did you notice the difference between the two episodes? Like, and it was so well done again and so much fun to me. Like, the first one was so obviously 1950s, Dick Van Dyke, like, in the way their house looked and how the cameras moved, like, how it was mostly just one camera in that living room, not, like, tracking them a lot. And even in the black and white tone, I mean, even, dude, how about even down to the credits being the main theme, which filtered into that, like, crappy 1950s TV audio black and white at the end?
Right.
Like, and all at the of beginning, that. At the
did
very
you notice, like, as it starts, like, it plays the Marvel theme by Giacchino, that they've been using. And then like it changes from like a stereo sounding thing to more of like a mono thing. And the quality gets worse. And then you see it on the TV set.
That's what I just said. And I love that you just repeated it because you maybe didn't listen to what I said because that was word for word what I just said. Which
I thought
you
were talking about
moment.
The end. I thought you were talking about the end of the show.
No, I'm keeping this in here too. No, I'm keeping this is amazing. That is what I was talking about. I love it so much. But yes, even that was different. But then I kind of expected the second episode to be the same or similar. And
right.
Dude, the second episode was like a la Bewitched. Like
totally.
Even they changed like the camera angles. There was more close-up shots. Wanda like looked into the camera almost at times. They like
right.
followed her outside with tracking shots. The black and white even looked a little different to me. The audio got like a slightly better quality. And like even the jokes, Robbie, and the setting of the house looked different.
Yeah.
And the jokes were like more appropriate to the 60s. It's wild. Like
when they're like drinking and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, it was so different in such a fun way that I kind of hope this is a precedent that they set. Like, I hope they kind of keep moving through it because they did the first two so well, like beyond my wildest dreams, to be honest with you, that now I'm just intrigued with how well can they keep doing this. Before we get into the episode now, give us a quick intro of the cast like we normally do. Now, I don't think every week we'll do a new cast reading, an intro to the movie like we used to do, but I think on the first episode, it's okay.
Right. And, you know, I think it'll be interesting to see, and this is what's fun about this series and about this new format is, you know, The Mandalorian, for instance, had a pretty different cast from episode to episode because it was sort of the serialized Western thing. And I think WandaVision is kind of turning out to be somewhat similar to that. Obviously, you've got a larger group of main characters, but you know, it looks like we've got some rotating characters in as well because they're trying to kind of have that sitcom vibe. So I will be curious to see how much we have sort of specific guest stars, if that makes sense. Again, kind of in keeping with the classic sitcom model. But yeah, without further ado, episode one stars, unsurprisingly, Elizabeth Olsen as Wanda Maximoff, Paul Bettany as Vision. We also have Deborah Jo Rupp, who people will remember from That 70s Show. So kind of a perfect sitcom addition there, playing Mrs. Hart, and Fred Melamed as Mr. Hart. And then I think maybe one of the best performances in episode one and episode two is Catherine Hahn as Agnes, the next door neighbor in this new suburban neighborhood. So the episode is written by Jack Schaefer and directed by Matt Shackman. And this first episode has a theme song composed by Robert Lopez and Kristen Anderson Lopez, who also did the music for Frozen, which is great because the score for this show is composed by Christoph Beck, who did the score for Frozen. So a lot of stuff here for you Frozen fans out there. But
how you thought we'd be starting this episode, I bet.
Right?
Frozen's well represented, by the way. Look at Frozen.
Very much. Yeah, man. Yeah, if whatever the Venn diagram is of Friends from Work listeners and Frozen fans, they should be very pleased right about now.
This is their dream episode. We've made it.
Man, okay, so there's a lot to talk about even in just this one episode, and I feel like we've already been talking for quite a while, but just to kind of follow it a bit linearly here, we have this 25-minute episode that opens up right sort of as you would expect it to in this black and white kitchen with Vision and Wanda there, like getting ready for him to leave and go to work. And one of the first subjects that comes up is this date on the calendar that they have a heart on. And it's August 23rd. And the episode will end up kind of revolving for a bit around what that date is supposed to represent, because we see sort of, and it's kind of the first, it's, man, it's so perfect because on the one hand, it sets up this miscommunication thing that we're talking about that's so sitcom-y, but it also sets up this kind of eerie, like, why can neither of them remember what this date is supposed to represent? Because there's this, like, you start to realize that
yes,
they yep. have no real understanding of what they're doing here.
Right.
And that starts to sort of cover every aspect of the show, even in just this one episode. But before we move on too much,
I thought they struck a perfect balance there of keeping us in the sitcom vibe, but still sprinkling in enough mystery, enough questions like that August 23rd thing, and like right. enough weird looks from Wanda, which, by the way, we got to talk about her performance in a second, but weird looks where there's enough mystery to keep us intrigued of what is going on, but you never really get pulled out of the sitcom vibe.
Right. Yeah, I mean, so before we go to some of the scenes like at Vision's office, I wanted to see if you had any thoughts on what exactly that date represents, you know, because we find out what it represents in the context of the show. Some folks have treated it as representing something larger, and I've already had some people text me about it. I haven't read up a ton online in terms of the reactions.
Are you asking me, Kyle, about an Easter egg? Because that's the wrong person to ask.
No. I'm asking you, Kyle, as a viewer, as someone that's familiar with the MCU writ large, do you think that this is something that's pointing to, like, is that a larger date that you think is going to come back? Or do you think that that was something that was really just there for the purposes of this episode and all it represented was that dinner with the Hearts?
I think 90% of it represented the dinner at the Hearts. It's possible that that date comes back in some other way, but it would be not much more than an Easter egg in my mind.
Right.
Like, I don't think we're going to come back and that's going to be like the day Wanda went crazy or something and they marked it with a heart. I don't think that's it. I think it was there to serve that purpose of the dinner and then to show us that they don't have recollection of why they're here.
Right, right. I think you could be right there because someone did point out to me, and this sort of feels like a big swing, but I can also buy it, that, you know, 823, if written the way that you would write dates in Europe, which people argue is how Wanda would because she's from Sokovia, which to be fair, we do get a good bit of in this episode, right? Like, which was another thing we should talk about here in a second. They bring up her being, you know, European, but that would be issue 238, it's a Marvel comic with kind of a famous Vision storyline involving Monica Rambeau and involving this sort of reality that's contained within this barrier. So, I mean,
that's a perfect explanation of that. I love that people find that, but that would be my guess that is the extent right. that it's an Easter egg. I don't think they're going to come back to that date, but if you can dive in and find an Easter egg out of that, then I think that's great. That's what I meant by 90%. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'm with you there then.
Which I love that kind of stuff. And that's again where I say I love that you tell me that stuff. And I think we both like when people let us know that stuff. Like, I want that to be a part of this conversation if you find that. So message us again on at the FFW podcast or the right. FFWpodcast.com because I love hearing those things. But yeah, that's about the extent I think about those Easter eggs, if that makes sense. You brought up the Sokovia thing. I did love all the tie-ins they still worked in, didn't you? Like, wasn't totally isolated. How about the fake commercials, Stark Industries thing?
Yeah, man. Okay, so we've got to talk, and this kind of works perfectly with what I was going to say with, like, the scene at Vision's office, right, where he's also asking, like, what do we even do here? Which is, again, another moment where it's really funny.
But, right, because he doesn't know.
No, he can't get anyone to, like, they're just like, oh, well, you know, we just measure output. And he's like, yeah, but output of what? They're like, well, you know, it's just how we determine
productivity.
But, productivity. What are we producing? but it's like, so you have that and you're right. Like,
That's what I mean. The element of mystery mixed in there. Oh!
And so I was thinking that the whole episode would be something sort of like that, right? Where it was kind of totally divorced from who these characters were. So yeah, I like whenever you hear Vision say, hey, Wanda is from Sokovia, because you're like, oh, wait, so is there, like, to what degree are they aware of their past? And that's what links into the Stark commercial, right? Because, like, I like the trend currently that we're seeing, and we'll see if episode 3 kind of holds to this, of these things that are clearly linked to Wanda's history.
Oh, I got chills.
And Because I don't even, you know, you could look at Stark as being like, oh, well, you know, she was on the Avengers. But I think it's even more, like, we had a big focus in that Legends episode on the story she and Pietro told about the Stark missile, you know, basically them blaming Stark for their parents' deaths.
Right. Almost maybe like it's not that Stark Industries actually made a toaster, but it's more like these are just important events in Wanda's life. If this is all made up in Wanda's head or whatever, yeah, it's not that the Stark Industries ever actually made toasters. I love that. By the way, the Sokovian thing right before that was maybe the funniest joke to me in the whole first episode when she says, your guest is now leaving. And she puts her eye. That, like, all those jokes, and she's European. That was all really funny to me. Like, that was not funny in the 1950s tribute. That was actually legitimately funny to me now. Yeah, I love the idea of those things tying in. But again, we don't, like, this was an overarching thought I had too, is like, we don't fully know yet how these things are tying in, as far as like, is this another reality where Vision is alive and interacting as himself? Or is this like an Inception thing where Vision is like the projection of what Wanda remembers Vision being? You know, we don't know that. Could this be Wanda's just dream of Vision? Or is this another reality where Vision is alive?
Well, and that poses the bigger question of, is Wanda in control here, or is Wanda being controlled?
Oh, what a good thought. Yeah. Is she doing this, or, quote, is someone doing this to you?
You know, right, because in one scenario, you could argue that if she's purely inventing all of this, which there has to be a level to that, you know, because of things like we're talking about with the commercials, but, you know, the second question there is Vision a passive player in this where, like he's just a creation, or is he on the same plane as Wanda, right? Like, are they kind of in the same position here, like where they're being subjected to something? And if so, then how is Vision here?
Okay, so this is a little bit of projecting, which is something we said we wouldn't do a ton, but here we are with new content. I've said before that like what it's setting up to be is something I actually would love, which is that Wanda created this reality to cope with the loss of Vision and a loss of a lot of things because she's never really gotten to live that life. And out of her depression, she makes this up, but that the show could go the direction of they then, like other humans are trying to pull her out of it to deal with it, and she so doesn't want to deal with it that it ends up being her and Vision, who she's convinced needs to help fight for their home, they actually physically fight against the quote-unquote good guys trying to help her. And then the show could end with her actually snapping out of it and just being depressed. And I think that would be an amazing storyline, that she just has to actually deal with it as a human, not via her powers. Like, it still hurts, and that it's not all perfect. However, it seems to me like that's almost too obvious. Like, in the same way I always bring up the Skrulls, like, that is what they're so obviously setting up that it makes me wonder if there has to be something else going on. Otherwise, are they just giving me exactly what I think they're giving me?
Well, and that's, I mean, I like that you raised that, because we've had a lot of folks over the past week. We ran this kind of what to read before WandaVision. And a lot of people have talked about House of M, and a lot of people made a lot about House of M. I tend to think that Marvel is so aware that people are tracking that, and that the MCU is already so different from the Marvel universe as it existed at that point. I mean, there are some similarities you can draw for sure. But I just trust that the studio, and I could be wrong, but I would expect them to not play into our expectations so precisely, like what you're saying. Like, I just don't, like, there's this famous comic storyline, and every time—
To be fair, by the way, I expect that too.
Right. No. I think that that's just something they've consistently done. So I have the expectation that they may pull from that. But yeah, like, I wonder even how much of, like, everyone right now is so convinced that what's happening is Wanda is creating a reality to kind of deal with trauma. And I think the Marvel Legends emphasis on her trauma is kind of playing into that. And I'm sure that, like, and I'm with you, by the way, that I think that's a powerful narrative. And I think that that has to play into it to some degree. But there's also something else going on here. Because, like, you know, and we'll get into some more of this.
Because of the TV watching episode. And stuff. Like, the post. Right. But even the post-credit, like, she's being watched. If she was just creating it, how is somebody kind of watching it on TV?
Right. So let's talk about the end of the episode.
Robbie, it's important to note, I think, that it's clearly not just in her mind. Right?
Sure.
Not
just totally, in her mind. Totally. Well, and so let's talk for a second about the end of that dinner, which is the only time in episode one where Wanda kind of breaks character.
Right,
and then we'll talk about
scene.
that after episode scene. Yeah. So what do you think?
Which is so creepy, by the way. Hold on. Before we dive into that, like, my favorite thing about these movies and this podcast is that I get to enjoy that the first time. Like, I was watching it, realizing I don't get this first time ever again. I actually literally called you and said, dude, remember when you start this that you'll never get this first watch again. Like, let's say WandaVision turns into your favorite show of all time. I'm not saying it's going to, but if it did, you'll never get this first watch again. So just enjoy it, people. Like, don't, before you get so crazy into analyzing everything, sit down. Dim the lights, get a thing of popcorn and watch this. Like,
oh, man.
We're watching fun content, you know? It's so well acted. It's so well directed. It's so well done visually. Let's just enjoy that. So anyways.
Man. No, I'm glad you said that because that scene for me was so powerful in a way I still don't even fully understand. Like, I don't know what was going on there, but it's like, it was the first time that we see, like, and this is where Elizabeth Olsen's acting is just incredible because
her eyes, she does this like thing where she like stares into the distance as if she's processing, but she can't figure it out.
She has this way of going from this character she's been portraying to like immediately feeling like the Wanda we've known in a way. Like, and I can't even really explain it, but it's like all of a sudden with the way she was looking, I was like, oh, this is like the Wanda we've been watching in these movies, not the like 50s housewife Wanda.
Right. It's like she's snapping out of character, if you will.
Right. And then her looking at Vision and saying, Vision, help him. Where it's just like, nor like she's been
Chills.
All like sing-songy, right? And just like,
Chills.
And no, same. It's like,
okay, Robbie, this is out of order, but that's what I was going to say about if Wanda is not in control of the reality in the second episode. My favorite scene in both episodes so far was that beekeeper comes up. We'll get into it in a second.
Right.
But she looks at you. Did you catch this? I have chills. Oh my gosh. I can't even talk. I have chills. She looks right at him in that creepy moment and just goes in low voice, not housewifey. She just goes, no.
Yep.
And then it rewinds.
Gosh.
But it's like the Wanda we know is under there. And she's aware of like, this is not what I wanted to have happen. So we're just going to rewind it and start over because that's not what I'm doing here. That makes me afraid that they're not going to be able to get her out very easily because that look of no was like, oh gosh, that was my favorite scene. But she does that in the first scene too. When she looks at Vision, she goes, help him. That was not like like you said, it's not like the 50s thing anymore for a second.
Right. And so then to add to the creepiness there, as soon as Vision does save Mr. Hart by, you know, using his powers to remove the thing he's choking on, he just hops up and he and Miss Hart are like, wow, what a great time. You know, we're going to have to talk on Monday about that promotion. And it's just like, it's...
Yeah, what made him shift gears so quickly? Just that he was saved from choking?
Well, it's almost like they're like
redoing it. It's like when they broke the wall, when they broke the barrier, it like reset the scene kind of.
Right. Where like, yeah, exactly. And
like, this isn't going how I want it to go. So now,
yes,
dude, you're right. I didn't think about that. Cause he does hop up like, so like, yep, you're at the promotion. I was like, wait, that went horrible.
Right. Which is, it's great because on the one hand, right, it's again playing into kind of the inherent ridiculousness of sitcom plots. Where like
it's always
like what, like 17 minutes in, like something terrible has happened and there's some like big meeting that was gonna determine, you know, whatever consequences. And then like right at the last minute, like 19 minutes into the 22-minute show, it actually winds up being something that worked out for the best, and then like happy ending and show's over, and then next episode repeat the same thing. So I love that they play into that in the creepiest way, because you're like, oh wait, like that's not how they should be responding to what just happened at all. And then on top of all that, right, while he was choking, we didn't talk about his wife is just saying over and over again, stop
it. What the heck was that?
Stop it.
What was that? I watched it twice and I was asking Annika. Well, yeah, I was asking Annika. She's like laughing and saying, stop it. Like, it's like she's like, it's like she's a broken record. Like in that scene when Vision breaks that barrier, that wall, it's like she gets stuck or something. Right. Before it gets reset. It's like a glitch in the Matrix, basically.
Exactly. That's what I was about to say. It feels like the record's scratched. Like it's like, and then the needle gets picked up and placed back, and then it keeps moving along. It's that whole scene was so uncomfortable and so strange. And what you said earlier, like then after that, not only do they kind of usher out and everything's happy, and when they sit on the couch and it's just like, well, this all worked out perfectly.
Right.
And we're zooming out, and then we get like, I love how the show also has like three credits at the end.
Hold on. Oh my gosh. We have a podcast that we're not going to keep short because there's no way. Hold on. I'm getting overwhelmed. I was going to say that I think the reason this show resonated so much with me is because this is like my 100% vibe of my favorite kind of movies. You know how I always say like my favorite thing about movies is not knowing and then having to find that out and know.
Right.
But it's not just that, because like I love like a movie like Winter Soldier, and there's a lot of not knowing. But there's a difference between like a twist and like
a
legit
mark.
Like thriller or like mystery. Like the point of the show is the mystery of it.
Right.
Those are my favorite movies. You know, I tweeted a little while ago my top 10 favorite movies, and one of them was Truman Show, right? There's not like a twist in it as much. It's more just like a mystery.
Right.
That's what I mean by not knowing. And this show has got that. I'm trying to figure out what the creepiness is even coming from, and I love that vibe. So I think, one, that's why that resonates with me. Two, the wrapping it up on the couch. I can't get over how much I enjoyed the studio audience part of this. Like there was actually like crazy live applause to wrap it up. Like, or like, oh, when they kissed, but like people were genuinely excited. It added a lot of fun intrigue. Not only did it paint the sitcom 1950s vibe correctly and add to that, it actually added to my experience. Like
that's
in
so
that
true,
moment,
yeah.
Which is kind of funny because I did not think, you know, typically like a laugh track or applause track is actually the cheesiest thing we make fun of in sitcoms. But in this case, I was really enjoying it. Three, I almost thought that like when they wrap it up on the couch, like Vision, Paul Bettany himself almost like broke character. Like a little bit of the smile seemed like he was laughing a little bit at some of the ridiculousness. Now, maybe it was still written to be that way, but like just to point out how ridiculous it was to wrap that up on the couch, like it did all go well after the whole thing was a disaster. Just reaffirming what you said. Yeah, it's so strange and so interesting. And then lastly, this is my actual lastly, just the fake credits thing to the black and white television, and then to zoom out to another guy watching it in the control room, which is the obvious cliffhanger ending. I was in, Robbie. I was in. I'm in.
Man, so I actually have not read anything extra on the credits. What did you see Easter egg-wise there?
Then this is what I want people to chime in and confirm what I'm about to say, because I don't want to be the Easter egg guy because I'm not an expert in this. But the episode says it's directed by Abe Brown. Abe Brown is one of Peter Parker's classmates, the black kid, in the decathlon team. That's Abe Brown.
Oh, that's crazy.
I have chills. So Peter Parker in Spider-Man Homecoming is on decathlon team. His classmate is Abe Brown. I have no idea the tie of that, but Abe Brown, I guess back in the day through some Google research in the comics, was a member of something called the Sons of the Tiger, which is a group of martial artists. Huh. And he's like a vigilante under the code name of Black Tiger. Now I have no idea what that means, but I know that some people that know way more about this stuff could fill us in. But Abe Brown itself, the fact that that name was chosen there is not by chance.
Wow.
That's what I'm saying. There's all that level of stuff, too, that I don't know, but is pretty wild. And not why this podcast exists, but like when you find those things, some of them are crazy.
Well, and then we have to talk about the guy that is doing the watching there. And, you know, I'm sure most folks noticed that emblem there, like on, I think it's his notebook as he's watching. And that is the logo for the organization within the Marvel Comics universe known as S.W.O.R.D., which in the comics stands for Sentient World Observation and Response Department. However, in the show, it's been changed to Sentient Weapon Observation and Response Department. I think that that makes sense for a couple reasons. One, I should say, kind of again as a fun thing, S.W.O.R.D. was created by, of all people, Joss Whedon, whenever he wrote The Astonishing X-Men back in the mid-2000s, just kind of a fun thing given how much of an impact he's had on the MCU. And in the comics, it's sort of the opposite of S.H.I.E.L.D. in that whereas S.H.I.E.L.D.'s, which makes sense, right, given the names there, but S.H.I.E.L.D. is protecting the Earth, whereas S.W.O.R.D. is kind of the going out and more attack-oriented, like Earth Force, going into different alien worlds.
Is that the same logo on the back of the Beekeepers?
Yes, I believe so, and also on the helicopter, the toy helicopter. Okay. So
that could be the guy watching, theoretically.
Correct.
And Wanda's the weapon, theoretically.
And so that's the thing. As I do think it's worth noting that in the comics, it's a very space-themed thing. And I think some people thought, to go back to Far From Home, that where we saw Nick Fury there at the end was involved in some kind of S.W.O.R.D. thing, thinking of S.W.O.R.D. as what it is in the comics. I get the sense now that, not saying that couldn't be the case, but that it's looking less space-themed, which is why they swapped out the word world for weapon, and that it's something else. Like, sentient weapon is such a more, like, sinister sounding thing, because, like, yeah, who is the weapon? Is it Wanda? Is it something that's going on, like, within this world she created?
And then the question becomes, are the people trying to contact her on the radio or the Beekeeper, are they potentially good dudes and the guy watching is a sinister guy and the good people are trying to get Wanda out of this for the sake of stopping S.W.O.R.D., theoretically? Right.
Yeah,
maybe.
I mean, that
again, I don't know this, but
right. I mean, and the other thing, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I'm trying to remember if this was in episode one as well or just episode two. But you know, in the trailer, right, like the voice of Wanda who's doing this to you, did you catch who that is speaking?
No.
Okay, so I heard this and I double checked to be sure, and I'm pretty sure this is right. It's Randall Park.
Oh, from Ant-Man.
Who plays, federal, you know, FBI agent Jimmy Woo in Ant-Man and the Wasp, who we knew was going to show up in WandaVision. That adds a whole nother wrinkle, right? Because he's an FBI agent.
Well, and that's from the trailer. That's from the trailer. He's like running away from something.
Right.
Well, and I love that because ahead of time I thought this was setting up to be kind of a two-party thing, right? Wanda versus people trying to get her out.
Right.
But now maybe you're saying like, maybe it's actually like a three-party thing. You got Wanda doing this thing over here and somebody like Jimmy Woo trying to help while there's a third party that's actually trying to hurt.
Right.
Which I love. And who is and why?
Well, and then you have to ask the question that I think perfectly takes us into episode two of how does Monica Rambeau fit into all this?
Right. Right. So that's, yeah. Yeah. And, how does she fit into this?
So episode two, for the record here, directed by Matt Shakman, again, like episode one, written this time by Gretchen Enders. Big musical feature here is Help Me Rhonda by the Beach Boys, which is also used in some really fun ways. Also a different theme song there, which I honestly did not expect, and you already kind of hinted at. I thought that either the theme song was going to have just kind of one shout out in the first episode or that it was going to be the same one used over and over again. But to the extent we're getting a different one for each episode or however long that lasts is very cool to me. And the fact that they went so hard into the animation style that people know from Bewitched was just...
Right, how funny was that, by the way?
Well, and even in this episode, like, the little animation you get, like, of the gears inside Vision, like, just such cool ideas. And
right, at this point now, instead of giving them like a theme, I'm with you. I think it'd be cooler to keep embracing this. Like, give me a new theme for episode 3 in a new era.
Right.
Like, I love it. It's got to stretch everybody so much to like do that much research on each era. But I love right. it. And I love that the actors are even trying to act differently.
Oh, no, totally, totally. And yeah, like you said, totally different kind of cinematography style there. Before we forget, we again have Paul Bettany and Elizabeth Olsen back, obviously. We also have Teyana Paris join in this episode. And that is the character we know will be Monica Rambeau, the grown version of the character we were introduced to in Captain Marvel. However, for whatever reason, here she is introduced to us as Geraldine. We also have Jolene Purdy here as Beverly. We have Amos Glick as Dennis the Mailman. We have kind of all these, like, their friends starting to introduce themselves. Maybe one of the more memorable ones here also is Emma Caulfield Ford as Dottie. There's some really interesting scenes between Wanda and her. And then, and Randall Park as the uncredited voice of Jimmy Woo. So I think that about covers us in terms of the production side of things. I'm with you. This episode is, I think, like, I finished the first one and was very happy with it. And then the second one was a good deal better even to me. Or like, just a lot more stuff to latch on to.
Well, I think it just shifted our expectations with how different it was going to be.
Right, right. Well, I thought it was funnier in some ways. Like,
yes. I mean, the talent show scene was really funny.
Yeah. And just like, man, what a great idea. But
I love all the side characters being like, when they're doing the talent show and then Vision starts flying, which is we got to get into anyways. And then she like covers it by doing the rope. And the guy's like, oh, see, there's a rope. Yeah.
Right.
Like, that was amazing to me.
Well, and my favorite moment there is, and one of the moments that I was talking to earlier about us all laughing at is whenever he like puts the hat through himself and then she like pulls back the curtain and there's all the mirrors and someone's like, wait, is that how mirrors work?
Shut up, Beth. That's what she says back.
It's, yeah, okay, so I started out the sort of talking through the plot of the first one, so why don't you get us started with episode 2 here?
Yeah, okay, well, you all watched it, but in case you didn't and you're listening to this, go watch it. But as Robbie asked me to do, I will say they start off by practicing a magic show, a magic routine for this famous talent show. That the town's putting on, and the town's putting it on for the children. It's for elementary school charity. By the way, the for the children thing is unbelievable. So
another
funny
joke that then becomes kind of creepy at the end.
Right, for the children. And then, so Vision kind of goes off to hang out with the guys while Wanda hangs out with the girls. And you see like very much like a Pleasantville. Like, everything's black and white, then some things become color when they're not right, like Pleasantville. Mm-hmm. But, like, the wives are mean and cliquey, and people don't fit in. So definitely embracing that vibe. Meanwhile, Vision's, like, with gossipy guys that don't even really need security because nothing goes wrong in this town. Kind right. of like Truman Show / Pleasantville. Vision then eats some gum, which messes up his, like, gears inside his stomach, which is funny. Right. Basically, you get drunk Vision. And this is where it gets really important. They go do the talent show. But, dude, while Vision is doing the talent show, he's so confused and, quote-unquote, drunk. He's not drunk, but his gears are all messed up that he starts forgetting that he's trying to hide the fact that he's a cyborg. So
right.
he starts flying and people are like legitimately creeped out, and then Wanda has to cover that up. I thought those were four like genius things that they kept doing tricks, and Wanda had like a genius way of kind of covering it. By the way, so like Vision picks up a piano and they're all like, what the heck, how can he be that strong? And then Wanda like shows it's just actually a picture of a piano. I love the guy goes, that was my grandmother's piano. That's all he adds when she walks away with it. So that's kind of the plot, but again, they wrap it up on the couch like, hey, everything went so well. And there's just an underlying weirdness. And again, the same thing of, I'm so pulled into the sitcom vibe. It's funny. I'm into it. But then also there's some things that are just funny, not even sitcom-y. And then there's an underlying weirdness that is like, something's out of place and this isn't right. And I can't really figure it out. And that's what I love. So more of the same in that way.
Some of the more memorable moments here, like the reason he winds up going to the neighborhood watch is, you know, that scene that we talked about last week that you saw on Jimmy Kimmel, where they're in the bedroom, they're hearing the kind of bumps against the window, and that scene right. ends up getting kind of played off for laughs in a lot of ways, and then you see, oh, it was just like the branch, like so silly. But then there at the end of the episode, and kind of this weird scene we saw earlier, that's the same noise, right, that they were hearing there whenever she goes outside and sees the manhole cover being moved.
Right. So we got to talk about this scene. We had a listener message us specifically about the beekeeper scene asking you, is there other famous like beekeeper things in the Marvel comic universe? And right. what was your answer? And what did you take from that scene?
So a couple things on the comic side, as I told him, really the only like bee themed villain I can think of, you know, outside of like Ant-Man type stuff, is there's this hilarious, like Nazi supervillain, like Red Skull style supervillain whose body is composed entirely of bees.
Something tells me that's
not what they're yeah. pulling from. however, there is something that you'll actually recognize having played the Avengers game. So AIM has the suit that like the typical AIM kind of henchman wears.
AIM, is which called we've in seen the comics. From Iron Man 3, by the way.
Oh, true. Well, I guess I didn't know if they showed those suits or not. But yeah, those are called the beekeeper suits in the comics. And so you could argue kind of based on the way we saw that this was someone involved in AIM. Again, yeah, you're right. That's a good point. That would have to connect back somehow to Iron Man 3
My
at that point.
My guess would be is that it's not that specific detail is not that tied to a comic. Like, I think it's going to be important for the show why he was wearing right. beekeeping gear. But well, I don't think it's like going to be specifically
tied
to a comic.
Because there are bees buzzing too, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're like, the bees like came through the manhole with him. So that was weird.
So
I don't know
why it's
a beekeeper, but that event is obviously going to end up being important. I viewed it more like the Truman Show whenever he sees something out of place. But again, the other important right. thing was that Wanda says no and rewinds it there.
Yeah.
Super creepy. But again, giving us a hint that she is in control of this in some way.
So I think you're totally right. I do think that comics-wise, or probably it might be, you know, there might be stuff we could pull from. We might, in retrospect, be able to see some Easter eggs. And hey, if you're listening right now and you know exactly what that is, let us know, and we will be happy to talk about it on the next episode. But what I thought watching that, and I said this to Candace, Kyle, you and Candace share a love of the series Lost. And
yes.
to me, that scene was like the polar bear scene early in season one of Lost, where you're just like, what the heck is
it's
this
just so
doing
out of
here?
Place. That's yeah. the point.
Yeah. yeah. And the thing is, right, like I think that it's in Lost at least, like some of those things, for better or for worse, end up being totally different than anything you might have thought they were gonna be. And
well,
I would
and
love
in some
it if
cases,
that's the case here.
Ironically, in Lost, like the polar bears were really just not that important, period. Like
right,
they never,
right.
they did tell you what it was, but it never ended up mattering that much.
Right,
and so
exactly.
that's where I say, let's not get hung up on the crazy details of like, why is it bees at this point? It
totally.
Could just be to say how out of place it was. Here's a crazy thing. It could be as little as like, what if it was a guy in the real world actually doing a beekeeping thing and he stumbled into Wanda's like portal of reality or, you know, just something
right.
to show you that it's that different. That's the key.
Right.
Unless, by the way, maybe it is a Nazi bee killing villain.
Hey,
I don't know. But,
you know,
but that the knows? Point there was that it was so weird and out of place.
It's, the world's weird these days.
That was my favorite scene, though.
But the other thing that I wanted to talk about, although I definitely feel like that scene was kind of the crux of both episodes, a similarly uneasy scene was the one
yes,
with Wanda and Dottie, right? Where,
yeah.
Why which,
did
by
she
the
say,
way, is
I
all,
know who you are?
Right. Well, and she doesn't she say, like, because she.
Well, then Wanda says, I'm not here to harm anyone. And she says,
right.
I don't believe you, which is super
yeah.
creepy.
Well, and then
I have chills
we
right now.
See,
oh my gosh.
we see Dottie break character, right?
Like, right.
Which is a whole different interesting thing because in the first season, we see a hint of that. But then here, she, because doesn't she ask, like, who am I? Where are we? What's going on?
And okay. Then it makes me wonder if it's more like Inception where he says, never recreate from memories. It almost makes me feel like Wanda has created all these characters from people she somewhat knows or something. Right, like deep down. And so like they're able to break character when they realize like, oh, I'm not supposed to be here, almost.
Right, oh gosh, yeah.
Because Dottie did, yeah, because she was, yeah, that was so weird.
And
oh,
that's again, and it's so, yeah, it's so interesting to try to figure out what the relationship is. And Wanda's insistence that, yeah, she's not trying to hurt anyone. She just kind of wants to be in this world. As this sort of retreat. But yeah, the scene.
Right, and the way Wanda says that is like, Wanda was aware that Dottie knows what she's talking about. Like, right. Wanda also breaks character there and like really right. calmly says like, I'm not trying to hurt anyone. Almost like she's talking to the people trying to shut this thing down or whatever. Uh-huh. I don't know.
Yeah.
By the way, it's also so fitting that the song is Help Me, Rhonda, Help Me, Rhonda. And as it's saying, Help right. Me, it kind of edits to Whoa. So it's like, help me, Wanda. Help me, Wanda.
Right.
Who's doing this to you? Which I thought was really clever.
Man. Oh, no, totally. And again, just that scene, like, in the same way that the dinner scene kind of has the creepiness of Mrs. Hart saying, stop it. You know, this scene and him choking and almost dying, I guess. This scene ending with her, you know, having blood like gushing from her hand where the glass is cut into her is also right. just like that. Contrasted with the kind of idyllic world around them is again just it's a great visual. It's a great
the color, obviously.
Right. And then to go from there to again the same way, right? That we go from the end of that dinner conversation to like, wow, we're gonna have to talk about that promotion. Then they just kind of go right on to the talent show, and then it's just more sort of sitcom.
Right. And
hijinks.
Then from that point on, Dottie is actually like, you guys won. That was the funniest thing we've ever had here. It's like once she gets
so
snapped
true.
Out of it in the same way,
I didn't even think
she's
about
not the
that.
Mean person anymore to them.
Wow.
So it's like once that moment happens, it's like, yeah, it's like they get snapped out of the matrix and then it changes the outcome.
Well, and by the way, it is similar again to what we highlighted in episode one there, where it's like playing off the classic sitcom of like, look, things go totally wrong. Like, this is not how they were supposed to go. And now it's going to be a disaster. But then everything that we thought was going to make it a disaster is actually what works out perfectly, right? Where it's like all like the weird stuff that she has to come up with to hide Vision's actual powers are right. what make them all love them. And it's a perfect talent show. And yeah, I mean, you're right. It's so
amazing.
Perfectly following that formula, but also playing on it intentionally.
Well, and I don't know if this is good or bad yet, but I will be fascinated to see how long do you think they'll keep this vibe going of like Pleasantville with just a tiny bit of intrigue or a glitch in the system goes on, but then back to Pleasantville. I wonder how many episodes are going to be that vibe and at what point will they shift to we are aware of what's going on and they have to stop it. You know what I mean? I don't know the answer,
right.
but it'll be interesting to see how they do that. Like, are we just going to get, like, so at the very end of the episode, they turn everything color, right? And it's like this magical thing. But when they turn it color, it almost looks like they're wearing kind of 70s type clothes. To me, it did. It almost looked like that was kind of the transition into the next episode.
Oh, yeah, I think so.
My
that's,
gut
that's
tells me
too.
It's going to be a 70s vibe sitcom, which is like
an
we probably
all the
saw
family
from the
kind of thing.
Right, and we saw from the trailer, remember, like, Vision dancing, kind of wearing hippie clothes and stuff like that.
Right.
So, but are they going to do 80s? Are they going to do 90s? Are they going to do Seinfeld? Friends?
Right.
Are they
gonna
do, I mean, I kind of hope so, by the way.
Yeah,
but,
no, I love that. I mean, so I also,
but they might also,
that
they
last,
might also just do 70s and then stop. It's possible, too. That's what I'm saying. I don't know.
Well, and I'm, you know, I like that they are keeping us guessing. And also, I, you know, something we talked about in our Legends episode there, to the people that think the pacing is maybe too deliberate and that they're not getting to stuff quickly enough, I am still always going to be in the camp where I'm like, I would rather something be earned and you kind of slowly build to it than jumping the gun and giving us something that doesn't feel fully satisfactory. And right now I feel like it's building at kind of a perfect rate, and there's like a perfect amount of this creepy stuff in the background, but also like the actual sitcom stuff is enjoyable enough to where I'm not just wishing that away to get to the deeper mystery, if that makes sense. But that said, speaking of deeper mysteries, what I was also going to point out, if we're talking about the ending there, we have to talk about the Wanda kind of magical pregnancy moment.
Wow. Right. Just another one of those weird things. I don't know. What is she pregnant with? He's not even a human. Like, it's going to be crazy. I don't know if... then with the that kind of ties into the rewinding thing.
Right. Because, in that scene, she makes... They again, use this, like, for the children thing that we talked about earlier being...
for the
funny,
children.
And then, and then kind of getting creepy because, like, they say that, and then she suddenly has this, like, pregnancy bump. And, so we obviously know that, like, Vision in the MCU has been dead, that, like, there's no indication that Wanda and Vision, like, were ever having kids or anything like that. So it's, like, we know, like, in reality, this is not coming from anything that we're aware of. But then also it's, like, they are, like, moving into this sort of bliss of this moment, which is again kind of a classic sitcom thing, when they go out and see the beekeeper there. And I think that has to be significant too. And I think the other thing that flags for me is going back to the reason I've recommended people read Avengers Disassembled if they want some good context for this, because basically what happens in that comic is Wanda finds out that, in the comics, she and Vision have twins and they live a bit of this kind of idyllic life. And then she finds out that actually those twins never existed, but that they were just manifestations that she had created with her powers. And that's where she has her like psychotic break, is these kids that she thought were hers, she finds out are not real, and it like totally that sends her down this spiral, which ultimately winds up in all this kind of catastrophe. And so the fact that we sort of have kids in the picture now, and I think, you know, we've seen her pregnant in the trailers before, so this isn't a total surprise. But that combined with the fact that we have this other character that we haven't talked about a ton, portrayed by Catherine Hahn, whose name is suspiciously similar to Agatha Harkness, who is the one that was sort of responsible for telling Wanda that her kids were not real in the comics. That makes me think that we're heading down that road as well.
when Wanda says, or I could just be myself. Oh, Wanda. I thought that was really funny.
Right. That's wild.
There's so many different... See, again, that's what they do well, though. It's not specifically one comic story. It's like a little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit of our own taste. Like, you know.
Yep.
And so, like they're clearly setting up with her, the Agnes thing. But, I don't know. Are they going to go down that path literally? Directly? I don't know. That's what I'm saying.
We do have to point out, or I want to point out, that Catherine Hahn is also one of the best parts of the show to me so far. Like, the way she's perfectly portraying both eras of kind of like the neighbor housewife.
Right. She was a really good look at how they're different.
Yeah.
She played it differently each episode.
It's so perfectly. Again, just an example of perfect execution.
Okay. And I want to add one thing on that note. And this is kind of my last note, which is that everyone knows I like The Mandalorian and I like Star Wars. So I'm sorry that I always pick at it. But like a month ago, I tweeted something. I tweeted like, looks around, whispers, The Mandalorian still has an acting problem. I didn't want to get killed for saying that. But I think the side characters is one way that Marvel crushes the competition. Like Wanda and Vision are so good, and that's the plot, and they're so well acted, and it's so consistently quality and all of that. But there's really great side characters here again. Like, I think back to the last episode we did with Far From Home, and I talked about how I love all of Peter's classmates, how well-developed, acted, written they are.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, these are characters that, like, in The Mandalorian, I've complained about, like, the Bill Burr episode, where it's like, their side characters are just, like, thrown in there. They're not acted well. I don't have any emotional attachment to them. And the dialogue is poor sometimes. Like, it's just legitimately poor.
Yeah.
This shit, like, Marvel almost never seems to have that problem. I don't know what it is. Like, even all the way back to Iron Man 2, crappy movie, but I love Justin Hammer. Like, he is not the problem. And so Catherine Hahn is another one of those. So I'm, like, watching this, I'm like, all the boys in the town that at the meeting, they're funny. It, like, they play that sarcastic, like, tongue-in-cheek, they don't get the sitcom thing. It's all just acted well.
Yeah.
Dude, that's the thing totally about Marvel, man. Kevin... Did you see what Ben Affleck said about Kevin Feige this week? Did you see that?
No.
Yeah, amazing. Ben Affleck went on a huge rant about how Kevin is just like a genius, that he knows his audience and he knows how to do this, which coming from Ben Affleck matters, right? Because that's from the DC world. He's basically saying like they just do something well. And every time I watch a new Marvel show, every single time, I'm like my dad where I say, when are they going to run out of good stories to tell? Because my thought is like I watch this one now and I go, everything is just so tight, Robbie. The side characters are tight. The acting and dialogue is so intentional. The score this time with Christoph Beck, which, by the way, the scores are not always amazing, but the score with Christoph Beck was so fitting. It was so perfect.
Right.
The visuals were perfect. The plots have a perfect balance of sitcom versus mystery. Like, I could just keep going on and on about he just knows how to keep these things tight. And Catherine is just one example of that to me. So she just kind of fits in with, like, it's a perfectly well-acted side character.
And, yeah, I mean, you're so right in that I think the thing that, talking about, again, those people that we've kind of been happy to see come into the fold, like even friends of ours that have wound up doing rewatches and getting into this stuff, those people I have consistently heard admit that the quality control from Marvel, like even if at times there have been valid complaints about it becoming formulaic, and I think more of those belong like back in maybe phase two and thereabouts. But even then, like generally, and especially from there on, like, the acting, the writing, just the general execution of stuff has been as though like Kevin Feige just has really high standards and you just don't see the kind of stuff. Like to me, parts of The Mandalorian that you're getting at, like some of just it's like they just needed a different take, right? And no one was there to like ensure that happened. You know, and part of that to me, frankly, not to get too into The Mandalorian, but like the writing if you can take issue with, but I think a lot of that's directing. And I think the reason that like the episodes that I've loved the most in The Mandalorian are the Taika Waititi episode from season one and then the Peyton Reed episode, which was the season finale, but the season finale of season two. You know, like you have some established directors that know how to do this stuff and they're taking the stuff that Jon Favreau has written, who is a great writer. But I think The Mandalorian sort of enjoyed having this rotating door of directors, which is fine, but I'm just not sure that you have the Kevin Feige figure there to make sure that within that rotation, there is a consistent tone and a consistent quality. And I think it's clear, at least as of now, that we have that here.
Which is what we've always said about the Star Wars community. That's what they're lacking. And think about how like inspiring Kevin must be as a person, because he is able to like quality control all of this stuff all the while inspiring these directors to make these stories that are unique, they're quality, they're consistent. It's like he must have his hands in it, but not too much to where they don't feel like they can do anything because people still want to do it.
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
He just must be doing this amazingly well. He has to be. It's incredible. And I think I want to close with this thought.
Yeah.
I've said this so many times on this podcast, but again, this weekend, I was just reminded of how far-reaching the Marvel community is at this point, and I'm so thankful for that. I'm so grateful for it. I was watching Chef, and I haven't seen the movie Chef in like 5 years.
Gosh,
and
I just totally forgot. Movie.
Okay, I totally forgot though while watching the movie. Totally forgot. Obviously, it's Happy Hogan, right? Main character. But Scarlett Johansson's in that movie. Robert Downey Jr. is in that movie.
Yeah.
It's like, it's crazy. And then we talk about something like The Mandalorian, and you bring up the fact that Taika Waititi directed your favorite episode, or Peyton Reed did. Well, those are both directors of famous Marvel movies. Like, the community is just so absurdly large at this point that you almost can't watch a movie that doesn't include an actor or a director or writer from this community.
Right. That is insane. As long as we're closing out, there was one thing that you got to watch this before I did, and something that you kind of flagged for me that I appreciated was watching this through the lens of, you know, officially starting Marvel's Phase 4, although people know we're kind of starting this era with Far From Home, but also just being the first content that we've gotten since 2019. Whether given the fact that, you know, Marvel intended, like I think, you know, had COVID-19 never happened, then we would have had Black Widow followed by Falcon Winter Soldier followed by WandaVision.
Right.
And obviously that's not how it wound up happening. And the question there is, you know, is this for the best? We've kind of thought that it was.
That was the only other critique I had heard. Should they start this phase with something this weird, specifically this show? And I just, between you and me, like, I don't know where I sit on that yet. Because I was thinking back on it, and like all the other phases, it seems like they did start the other phases with something very familiar. That seems to be their plan. Start with something you know, then go weird. And I'd have to look at the whole order again, but I remember looking back and feeling like, okay, that is kind of the trend they have kept. So to go directly from Far From Home to something this unique, I don't know where I sit yet. So you can finish that thought, but...
So, you know, I feel like... First, yeah, we will have to wait and see how this plays out in terms of how it fits into our own kind of rewatch order and how that interacts with Far From Home in that way. I think looking from a release order standpoint and thinking of this as kind of the kickoff, I went back and forth on a watching, but ultimately I think what I really like about it is that it is so different that I think... By the end of this show, as much as I'm enjoying it, I think I'm going to be craving something resembling a more standard MCU production, which I kind of love. Because, yeah, like had I started with that, I don't think it would have felt quite as special, if that makes sense. Because I would have been like, okay, like Falcon Winter Soldier, kind of more of a, like we've gotten a lot of this between different movies. And then I would have been like, I really wanted something different. And I almost feel like those people I'm talking about that are so excited about WandaVision would have taken that as the opportunity to kind of write off the whole Disney Plus thing, even if it's great, by the way, even if it's like, which I have no doubt Falcon Winter Soldier would be perfectly executed, but it's, you know, a lot of the same people that would call like even Captain America Civil War, you know, sort of just like another superhero movie, which I know we disagree on, but I like that we're getting this super strange thing so that whenever we do get back to like quote unquote classic MCU, it's going to be something that we're kind of craving again for the sake of the familiarity. And I think it's going to make that more special.
Right.
That's at least how I feel at this point.
And then as soon as you get that with Falcon and the Winter Soldier and Black Widow, then we'll get Loki, which might be trippy again and weird again. So maybe it's a good balance going back and
forth. Totally. And then, yeah, we get Shang-Chi and the Eternals, which could be like who knows where on the spectrum. So, yeah, I think that it's going to be a good
balance. My only other argument would be that for us from Friends from Work, we decided to kick off our phase with Far From Home instead of ending phase 3 with Far From Home. So for us, we kind of kept the rhythm of kicking it off with a movie that's more of what you're used to. Then leading right into this. So kind of either way you look at it, I feel like it's a win. Whether you view it as WandaVision as the first movie, in which case it's like you're saying, so weird, but that will make you crave the normal again. Or you view it as we started with normal and therefore we are now craving something totally different, maybe.
Right.
Either way, I think it's probably okay, the right decision.
Yeah, yeah, I totally agree.
I don't know. As we wrap this up, my takeaway was I loved it. I had so much fun. I've heard some negative feedback, but mostly I think people are really enjoying it. It was so fun to have new content again.
Man.
It was so fun to see these kind of performances. And I love these characters. I've loved Wanda this whole time, as people know that they listen to this podcast.
Yeah.
I'm a big Wanda Maximoff fan. So that's been fun for me too. Like, I just, again, I don't get those experiences very often. So it's important to remember that. And I legitimately am excited to watch every Friday. Like, I can't wait.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. I mean, to your point, it's just so much fun just to have this this kind of content to be able to watch on a weekly basis, which is sort of just given the sheer amount of shows we're expecting, even not counting the movies, it's just going to be a lot of Fridays over the next year or two that we're just going to be able to sit down and watch something that, you know, and I hope that they can consistently reach these levels of quality. I'm not assuming that they will, but if they do, then man, like, as MCU fans, we are in for a huge treat.
Right. It's going to be so glorious. Okay, don't shut this podcast off yet, because I do think this last 1 minute is going to be very important. Again, to reiterate, direct message us on Fridays and before noon on Saturday, let's say. Any questions you have, because right here, we could include some leftovers from questions that people had or have, or discussion points, if we hadn't already worked them in the episode. So at the FFW podcast, like, we'd love to keep that going. And the FFWpodcast.com. As always, follow, subscribe, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Also, Robbie, I don't want this to start a discussion, but I just feel like we should add that this week there was rumors that Chris Evans might be coming back to the MCU, which we have such mixed feelings on. And then Chris Evans, shortly after this blew up, like, literally the word Chris Evans was trending, he tweeted like, oh, that would be news to me, or like, first time I'm hearing of it, something like that, to basically kind of quell the rumors and people be like, oh, maybe he's not coming back. He still might be. I don't know. He could just be saying that to be dumb. I don't know. Either way, I think we should just tell you that that's out there in the rumor mill. There are a lot of places where you can find rumors like that every day. We probably aren't one of them, but if you listen to our podcast exclusively, it's something I thought you should know.
Right.
I would have mixed feelings because I love the character. I love Captain America, and I love Chris Evans being in the MCU. It'd be so fun for me, but he's already had a perfect story. Like, it was literally could not have been better. So I don't know what else I need from Captain America to enhance how I view Captain America. Again, if you want that version of Captain America, go watch one of the 7 movies he was in or whatever.
Well, and you know, to reiterate something you said to me earlier, I think this is such a great example of why there is something to be said for just letting this stuff play out, you know, and just seeing what happens before we jump to a judgment call.
Right, because they may do it amazingly well. So right now my gut says, well, maybe don't bring Chris Evans back, but maybe they'll find a way to do it. Like, Kevin has done everything else well. So if he thinks there's a story that needs to be told, I trust him to pursue it right now. That's not me saying, like, all hail Kevin, everything he does is perfect. I'm just saying I'll let it play out. So
Or it could never, it just turns out it's not anything at all. And we just, you know, everyone kind of gets all in a fit over something that's just a total fabrication.
Right, and then we'll waste so much energy talking about something that might not have even happened. Meanwhile, missing the energy on this stuff because it's actually happening.
Exactly.
Thank you so much for listening. Guys, this is just the first episode of an entire year of new content. My voice is already shot, which is good because that means I have a week to recover. And it's been so much fun. Thanks for listening. We love you wherever you're at. Stay with us. Message us. Watch WandaVision if you haven't already seen it. And we're going to be talking about WandaVision episode 3 next time on Friends from Work.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. It
prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.